Did you choose the repertoire in this program?
The Dvorak was already there, and I knew we were going to have brass on the second half. So I can't take credit for the Dvorak, but I can take credit for all of the other things, or blame, depending on how you look at these things.
Is there something that makes these pieces fit together well, even though it sounds like some of the decisions were yours and others were not?
Well, I think they all actually fit together in lots of interesting ways. There is a kind of elegiac aspect to a number of the works on both halves, both the lyric of George Walker and then in some of the brass pieces that we've got. There's also a very uplifting quality on both halves of the program, in the Dvorak within the serenade, and of course in the brass with the fanfares and the one we just heard. But there's also a real love of the sound of music that goes right across these things. You know what I mean? Looking out from a Bravenel hall, you would say the hills are alive with the sound of music, but that's already been said. So I think I would just, talk about how, the brass, it, amazingly, covers 400 years of repertoire, from the Gabrielli to the Takamitsu. They're two choirs, and they talk back and forth in both of those works. So there are actually a lot of different connections that have to do with times in the past, but also very much, I think it's a program that suits very much where we are as human beings at the moment.
Everyone loves the fanfare for the common man, which we just heard. Tell us about Fanfare Number 1 for the Uncommon Woman by Joan Tower.
Well, that was the first of a series of fanfares that she wrote with the same general name. And I think the idea, this was written in the 80s, and there were a great number of major milestones that took place in the 80s in terms of how we viewed one half of the world's population and what it was that they could do or what they were traditionally supposed not to be able to do. And so I think this was Joan Tower's way of saying, here, hang on a minute, let's regroup this a little bit. And we thought that, bookends was a great way to open and close the brass half of the program. And of course it's, as Goethe says, the eternal feminine leads us on. So we decided to lead right with the eternal feminine with this wonderful fanfare.
Maestro, one of the pieces on the program is your own arrangement of Gabrielli's Sonata Pian e Forte. Is this an arrangement for brass, and wasn't it also originally for brass in the first place? What can you tell us about this?
Well, it is originally for brass, and it's part of his Symphonie Sacrae from early 1600s. And to call it an arrangement is a little bit presumptuous, because what I really did was just go back to the ortext of the manuscript and really transcribe it for instruments that you would find in a modern symphony orchestra. So there's two trumpets, there are two French horns, there's an alto trombone, there's a tenor trombone, and then there's a bass trombone, as well as another tenor trombone. And so what ends up happening is we get the music of Gabrielli pretty much in its original state, but with this particular choice of instruments so that it has the qualities of each one of them in their particular register. And so, it's one of those things where it's a little bit like if you make the choices right at the beginning, everything's fine. And luckily, it's been performed a number of times, and I have yet to receive vegetables at the end of the performance, unwanted or otherwise. So I think that it holds up very well. And plus, it is such amazing music that really the sort of call and response aspect, which is so much a part both of liturgy, but also of the human experience of group ritual, is very definitely one that you can hear in this piece.
One of the highlights of these Utah Symphony concerts is Dvorak's Serenade for Strings. Is there something in particular that you like about this work?
Oh my gosh, is there something not to like in this work? I mean, it is so, it's a piece that he wrote when he was still quite young, and, you know, as a professional viola player. So he has a really deep understanding of how the strings work. And as many composers who were violists, Mozart, Brett Dean, one of the things that you find is that they have a kind of a vision of sitting in the center of the sound. Being the instrument that is not as deep as the cello or bass and not as high as the violins, they have a kind of global perception. And so in this work, you know, everyone has their lyric moments in ways that are just so seductively beautiful. And of course, by calling it a serenade, it is a title that, you know, doesn't presuppose any kind of, you know, heaviness or weightiness. And yet with Dvorak, every single phrase seems to be talking to us and speaking in ways that are incredibly intimate and personal, and yet at the same time perfect for a setting where we're listening to this with many others.
When did you first know you wanted to be a conductor, and what was your path to fulfilling that dream?
I was one of those strange children that really was interested in this from about the age of 12. And I think that's just because I wished I could play all the instruments, and that is a fool's errand, at least with my talent level. And so so I was lucky enough in the public school system in Santa Monica. They had a really very advanced music program. And by advanced, I mean that it was really opportunities for anyone who wanted to be involved. They had instruments that they would loan you if you didn't have an instrument in your family. And there was instruction, and, you know, it was just a normal part of what was thought of as a well-rounded education. And in fact, it's still going today. The Santa Monica High School Orchestra is famous around the world, literally, among its cohorts as being just extraordinarily good. And in fact, I think they've got several orchestras now at the high school level, because the one district had a feeder system. And so I was very blessed to have teachers who supported me the entire time. So I actually was on the podium and starting to conduct well before puberty, which probably explains, you know, my podium manner now. And, you know, I'll let others more well-versed, you know, go into more detail on that. But I think it is one of those things that it is just such a tremendous joy to be interacting with all of the different musicians and all of this incredible talent, and to help create an atmosphere where that talent can work together to create just inspiring harmony.
What would you say you're looking forward to the most on this program?
Oh, you know, since not having done very much with other musicians as a conductor since March because of the pandemic, I would say that it is very definitely just being out on stage with other musicians in a live situation where we're all reacting to each other. Because this is one of the things that reminds us how much musical expression and artistic expression is at the essence of what it is to being a human being. And so it is an essential part of what it means to be alive. And so to experience that with all of these gifted musicians of the Utah Symphony is just a fantastic, fantastic thing.